Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to In Conversation With, the podcast series that delves into the world of financial services and brings you face-to-face with some of the most notable figures in the industry. Listen as we discuss topics that are currently facing the industry and hear from visionary CEOs to disruptive innovators as we bring you a diverse array of voices and perspectives. We'll explore the challenges they faced, the lessons they've learned, and the insights they have to share about the ever-evolving landscape of financial services. Hello and welcome to In Conversation With. I'm Kimberly Dondo, and in today's episode, I'm joined by Ian Lance, co-fund manager at Temple Bar. Thank you for joining me again, Ian.
Pleasure. Good to see you, Kimberly.
So for those who might not have listened to our previous episode, could you just give us a background into yourself and how you got started in financial services?
Yeah, certainly. So I actually started, believe it or not, back in the late 80s. So I left university where I did economics. I worked for a couple of insurance companies as a an investment analyst. So I trained as an analyst. And I guess the formative part of my career, I worked for a fund management company called Gartner in the late 90s. And then eventually in 2007, I joined Schroders, where I started working with Nick Purvis, who I still work with today. And that's relevant because so Nick and I are probably best known for our value style of investing. Nick and I left Schroders in 2010 together and joined what was RWC at the time. Mm-hmm. And we've been at RWC for 13 years.
Wow. Okay. So kind of doing a recap, reflecting on the past year, what further insights can investors glean from Next's continued success, and how have these lessons evolved?
I think the thing that I think all investors should learn from Next is the importance of capital allocation. So in other words, the CEO and the rest of the board of the company, they are involved in the decision-making process of where they're going to invest the company's assets. And Next have done that rather well. And they've done it rather well because they've done two things. One is that they've invested in the business, and the business itself has been very successful. An example would be their online business, Next Directory, which they set up sort of 20 or so years ago. That's been a very successful business for them. But the other, I think, really interesting thing for investors is the other part of their capital allocation policy, which is that they use cash flow that they don't invest in the business to basically buy back their own shares. And some people might find this a little bit confusing, but simply all it means is you're taking cash flow, you're buying back shares in the business, so you're reducing the share count, you're reducing the number of shares in issue. And if you reduce the number of shares in issue, then even if your income doesn't grow, then your earnings per share are going to grow because mathematically there are less shares in issue. And Next are probably the poster child of the success of this strategy because they have bought back, believe it or not, 2/3 of their shares in issue since 2000. So there are only 1/3 of the shares in issue today that there were in issue back in 2000. And if you look at the impact of that, since 2000, their sales have grown about 5% per annum. But because they've bought back so many shares, their earnings per share have grown at about 12%, and so have their dividends per share. And the total return to shareholders, so in other words, the share price going up plus the dividends, has been about 16% per annum. And if I put that into share price terms for people, back in 2000, the share price of Next was about £5, and today it's north of £80. And I think what's really interesting about that is, you know, it's Next is a retailer, so it's a cyclical business. It's very reliant on the UK economy, and therefore I suspect people would be very surprised to find that, you know, a business that's say a cyclical retailer, the share price could have gone from £5 to £80 in the last 20 years or so.
That is quite impressive. And as companies navigate economic shifts, you talked about the cyclical nature of everything. What strategies have emerged for making even more prudent asset allocation decisions?
This is for investors you're talking about,
isn't it? Yeah.
I think a couple of things. I think investors, really, when they're thinking about investing, should always try to invest in strategies that put the probabilities on their own side, by which I mean, if you're investing in a strategy, you want to be investing in a strategy which has shown historically an ability to produce good returns. And so there's lots of academic research into what's called factor investing. So in other words, which styles of investing work in the long run and which styles don't. And by and large, these studies all converge on about three things. So one of them is what I do, value investing. So if you just systematically buy the lowest valued companies in the stock market, in the long run, that tends to produce an excess return, so a return above the stock market. The other one is size. So if you typically buy smaller companies, they tend to produce an excess return. And the last one, interestingly, is momentum. So if you literally just buy the stocks that were best last year, and then you sort of hold them for the next year, a momentum strategy adds value. Now, what's interesting is that there are some strategies which have worked recently, which actually in the long run haven't proven to be successful. So growth investing has been very popular, and certainly very popular at the moment. But interesting, in the long run, that isn't a strategy which has added value. So I think that, you know, that's always my starting point is if you're going to pick a strategy which works in the long run.
Mm. And with ongoing market dynamics, have there been any shifts in the perceived benefits of drawbacks of buying buyback shares for companies?
Yes. I'm talking here with particular reference to the UK stock market. Now, the UK stock market has suffered in recent years because there's been lots of selling down of the UK stock market. So, for instance, pension funds have reduced their holdings to UK equities, and so have lots of the big wealth managers. And so there's been this selling of UK equities, and what that's done is it's reduced the valuations of lots of UK equities. And I think companies have finally worked out for themselves that, you know, rather than just get angry and frustrated about their low valuations, what they can do is use that to the benefit of their shareholders by buying back their stock. And, you know, we just went through that case study with Next. Now, if you know, a few years ago, Next was one of the few companies that were doing this. Roll forward to today, and you find a lot more companies are doing it. In fact, people might be surprised if I said that 50% of companies in the UK have bought back their own shares in the last year. And that, you know, that is higher than I think we've ever seen. So companies are buying back their shares. They're paying out dividends, and the amounts are very, very significant now. Probably the one which I think will blow a lot of people away is NatWest Bank. So NatWest Bank, over the last 2 years, it's paid out 14% of its market cap in dividends, and it's bought back 30% of its shares in issue. Now, just you know, let's just go back to our previous conversation. Next, it took them 23 years to buy back 2/3 of their shares in issue. NatWest, it's taken them 2 years to buy a third, which is just absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? So, you know, if you add those two figures together, you add back the dividends they've paid you, 14%, the shares they bought back, about 30%, you've got about 44% of today's market cap that's been paid back to you in dividends or share buybacks in just 2 years. So I think that has been a sort of a huge shift in the market, is this realization by companies that in order to realize value to their shareholders, given their very low valuations, one of the best things that they can do is just buy back their own shares.
And given the evolving landscape, how have the risks associated with acquisitions transformed, and what new considerations should companies weigh in?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of interesting things here. We've always regarded acquisitions as risky, and we say that because of experience. We've seen so many acquisitions go wrong in the past. that we always tend to be quite wary of acquisitions. One of the extra risks that companies face today is the high level of interest rates, isn't it? Because often companies, will, if they're making an acquisition, they are borrowing money to make that acquisition. And of course, a couple of years ago, they could probably borrow money at between 1% and 2%. Today, they might be borrowing money at more like 6 or 7%. And so, you know, there's a higher cost to making those acquisitions than there was. And therefore, that acquisition has got to, you know, has got to pay off. So that would be, you know, that would be the first point. The second point, and this goes back to my point about UK shares being very cheap at the moment, is we are starting to see lots of acquisitions of UK companies by overseas companies. So to give you one example, we are quite large shareholders in Currys, the electrical retailer. They were bid for a few weeks ago by a US private equity firm called Elliott Capital. We actually came out quite publicly and said that we didn't think that the price that they were offering was enough. They've actually dropped the bid, so the bid hasn't gone through. That's kind of not really the point. The point is that these low valuations in the UK equity market are starting to attract attention from overseas companies. So, as you know, as well as that one, we've seen a bid for Direct Line. You know, we've seen big bids for Spirit. We've seen lots of bids of companies this year. And my expectation is we might continue to see that for the rest of the year, because values of UK shares are so cheap, and therefore for an overseas company, they look like very attractive assets at the moment.
Mm. And beyond the examples discussed previously, what are some recent instances of cyclical stocks that have demonstrated resilience and delivered compelling long-term returns?
There are lots of them. I think energy companies, mining companies, auto companies, they're all cyclical companies. And therefore, their profits go up and down. But in most cases, they tend to sort of carry on growing. The reason I always think they're interesting investments is because investors have a tendency to overreact to short-term news flow. So if you go into a recession, clearly the cyclical company's profits are going to go down. But the reality is that, you know, if you are holding that business for 5 years or 10 years or whatever, the fact that the profits have gone down in that particular year doesn't really significantly change the long run value of the business. And yet you absolutely know that the share price will go down. And therefore, buying cyclical businesses in a downturn can often be a very profitable strategy. And it's profitable because the share price basically follows the earnings down. And it shouldn't, if you think about it, because that short-term move down in the earnings doesn't really alter the long-run intrinsic value of the business, and yet it does impact the share price. And therefore, it's often an interesting entry point. I'm slightly labouring the example here, but if you take the example of Next, so during the financial crisis, the share price of Next went from £25 to £8 in 1 year. And that's really odd if you think about it, because we all know why, you know, people were worried about banks. But it's not really obvious why people should have been worried about Next, the retailer, in the financial crisis. And yet the share price fell, you know, you can see by sort of, you know, 2/3. Where are we today? You know, as we said earlier on, the share price today is over £80. So, and yet you had the opportunity during the financial crisis to buy that at about £8. So these cyclical shares, they can be volatile, but they can also offer really interesting opportunities.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, especially there are those moments where you do look at your shares. I wouldn't say like as a retail investor, and you just panic and you're like, oh no. But yeah, holding on to them seems like a smarter plan.
You raise a good point there. One of the things I would always say to people is try not to look at your shares too often.
Yeah, I don't anymore.
Yeah. If you think you bought a good business and you think you paid the right price for it, do the electronic equivalent of just putting a piece of paper in your drawer. Don't look at it. Try not to look at it.
Yeah, I just deleted the app. So
that's a very good piece of advice, actually.
Yeah, I just get the monthly email and then I can look at it. I think that's a better way of dealing with it. But in light of changing market conditions, what additional factors should investors now consider when assessing a company's suitability for a share buyback program?
Yeah, again, that's a very good question. When we talk with companies, we always talk about a sort of hierarchy of capital allocation decisions. So going back to this point earlier on about the job of a company's management is to allocate capital. Decision number one is to invest in the business. So because obviously if you don't invest in the business, then eventually the business is going to start to decay, isn't it, if you just don't invest in it. So that's decision number one. Decision number two is pay down your debt. You've got too much debt, a bit like a household, actually. You've got too much debt and you've got some cash flow, pay down that debt. Make sure you've got a decent balance sheet. If they still have surplus cash flow, then the decisions are around how they allocate that in terms of they could go and make some acquisitions. We said earlier on, we don't particularly like acquisitions. That's not normally one that we like. Then they can pay money back to shareholders, and they can do that via a dividend, or they could do that via a share buyback that obviously we discussed earlier on. And the balance between the dividend and the share buyback really depends on the valuation of the shares. So if your shares are very, very lowly valued, then share buybacks can be very, very powerful. In fact, going back to the next example, they turn the share buyback on and off according to the level of the share price. So when the share price is very low, they turn the share buyback on. When the share price goes back up again, they turn it off and they'll revert to paying special dividends. So that's the way we think about capital allocation decisions. And on those share buybacks, if you've got a strong balance sheet, if you're generating cash and your shares are very lowly valued, then a share buyback absolutely should be something you should be considering as a business.
And with your expertise, I wondered, considering the current economic climate, how can financial advisors adapt their strategies to assist clients in identifying undervalued cyclical stocks effectively?
It doesn't necessarily have to be cyclical stocks, I wouldn't say. But all I would say is that we said right at the start of the interview that one of the strategies which we can see works over time is value investing, so buying lowly valued shares. Now, interestingly, the spread in valuation between the most expensive stocks and the cheapest stocks isn't constant over time. It goes up and down over time. And now is one of those times when the very expensive ones, the grey stocks, are very, very expensive and the cheap ones are very, very cheap. And so I would say that today is an interesting opportunity for people to be sort of edging into value or income type strategies because of the starting valuation. So you know that in the long run, these strategies tend to produce an excess return. But right now, you've got an additional incentive to look at them because they are very lowly valued, even relative to their own history. So I think that would be something. And I suppose another thing that I would say is I absolutely recognize why people have been following passive investing for the last year, so just buying the index. But again, there are certain times in the market which tend to favor active fund managers like myself. Mm. And now is probably one of them because you've got, these big US technology stocks, which look very, very expensive. And then you've got a whole load of other stocks, which look sort of very, very cheap. I would say that is probably not a great environment, actually, for buying the whole index, because what you're doing is you're allocating more to those big expensive stocks and less to those small cheap stocks. That's an environment which should be good for active investing.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And finally, given the evolving market dynamics, what new tools or approaches can financial advisors employ to help clients make well-informed decisions regarding capital allocation or refrain from having minor freakouts?
Yeah. I mean, so we discussed one already, which is try to encourage people not to just look at their portfolio too often, because basically if you're losing money, or even worse than that, actually, if you are not making money and your friends are, I'm sure you would have heard the expression fear of missing out.
Mm.
It's called FOMO. FOMO is one of the most awful things that can happen to investors, because what it does is it panics them into making bad decision. So they will buy, you know, they will chase stocks that have gone up a lot at the wrong time. So that's, you know, that would definitely be one thing. And I think the other thing is just to advise people to be contrarian, long-term, and, you know, try not to tinker with your portfolio too much. Try to sort of think about a lot sensible long-term asset allocation policy. And then once you put it in place, just leave it and let it work. Don't constantly tinker with it, because, you know, often you'll be making wrong decisions. And of course, you're generating additional costs if you're doing that.
Well, thank you, Ian, once again, for speaking with me today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.